Hey guys, and welcome to the Moms and Mysteries podcast, a true crime podcast featuring myself, Mandy, and my dear friend, Melissa. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, Mandy. How are you?
I am doing great. I am living the dream, truly.
I really like the positivity, and that sounds really, really good. The weather's been so beautiful. I didn't mean to do the weather, but it has. It's been really nice. So, you know, we're done. This was like our last cool days.
That's a point positive for us. Yeah.
Yeah, we needed it. So we're about to go into hellfire for the next few months. But yeah, my kids are on spring break this week.
And mine are not.
Yeah.
Mine are not. We talked about this earlier today, Melissa, that my kids are on the weirdest schedule when it comes to having breaks from school. So they go to a private school, but they don't follow any of the local county's schedule.
Yeah.
So we have like breaks at random times. I've always like joked around and been like, I think we have a week off every 6 weeks. Well, I ended up figuring out that's actually true. So we're not on spring break. We actually don't have our spring break until the week after Easter. So the first week in April, but we had winter break back in February.
Right.
Not to be confused with Christmas break, which was back in December. But yeah, so we just have tons of breaks and we're not on break right now, but I'm very happy that you are. But we are on a break from soccer this week because everyone else is on spring break. So yeah, so when we're on spring break, we'll still have to go to soccer. Everyone else gets the whole entire week off this week. I don't ever get a whole entire week off. So that's just how things go for me.
You know, I get it. I really do. Because same thing, we have spring break, but then my son has therapy every day. Like it
just never ends.
It doesn't end. Yeah. So yeah, we're living the dream. There you go. We are really, truly living the dream.
Yeah. So I am really excited to get into the story this week. Just mostly, of course, it's a very tragic story, but I'm excited to get into it because I feel like it's really interesting in kind of talking about some of the topics that it touches on, and just you'll see as we get into it. It's very, very fascinating and just everything kind of comes full circle, you know, with DNA and a cold case from years ago. I always find those really, really interesting. I know some people prefer to listen to stories that are a little bit more recent and, you know, that have things in the story that they can relate to. And some people don't like to listen to stories that are from years and years past. I personally think that some of the stories from years ago that have been unsolved for decades that get solved, you know, now due to technology that we have.
We see it all the time now.
Yeah. And I just think it's so cool and so wonderful for the families and, you know, for the survivors who are able to get answers like so many years later. And this is a case that deals with that. So this week's episode was researched by Elizabeth Atwood. And that is somebody who I believe has graduated from Haley's program. I think she's graduated.
She has. She actually has helped me research. I needed help with one episode for criminality, and she did one on Kate Chastain from Below Deck and did an amazing job. Made my life 50 million times easier. It was awesome.
Yeah, she did such a great job on this case. I was so impressed with her research. And this also kind of gives me an opportunity to once again say how wonderful Haley is and how much we love her and talk about this wonderful training program she has. So she is one half of the True Crime Podcast Training Program. She's one half that created it. And we've talked about it before on the show when she first launched it and a couple times since then. But if you want to learn how to research true crime podcast stories, you can actually take an entire course that our own lovely Haley has had a hand in creating. You can find that at truecrimepodcasttraining.com. She's had, I'm not sure how many, but she's had several people who have applied and have taken her course and have graduated from the program and are now researching cases and doing work for podcasts just like Haley does. So if that's something that interests you, definitely check that out. As I said, this week's episode was researched by one of Haley's program graduates, Elizabeth Atwood.
Her protégé.
So thank you. Yes, thank you so much, Elizabeth. And we'll get into the story. So although I never personally think to describe myself this way, Melissa, you might think to describe me this way. Would you describe me as an outdoorsy person?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I think of indoorsy people as people who are just like city people. Like, you're not.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I do love doing outdoor activities and really just prefer being outside in general. I've said before, the heat doesn't really bother me. I don't like to be outside in the cold, though. That is one thing that will get me indoors really, really fast. But one of the most sacred and cherished parts of my day is actually the time that I take to myself to go outside and take a walk. And it's not just because walking is great for you and I love exercise, which I do those things as well, but it's the fact that it's something I can do outside every day and I know that I'm going to get to have that time outside every day that really keeps me coming back for more. Here in Florida, we do have some really beautiful scenery, but there really isn't much in the way of hiking, and that's because, number one, the elevation is practically zero, and number two, the heat from March to November really prevents traditional hiking from being very enjoyable. I would, of course, much rather prefer to be in the mountains taking real hikes, but unfortunately for me, it's all paved trails and sidewalks. While walking and hiking are both generally safe activities, it's important to still be aware of potential risks and remain vigilant of your surroundings at all times because dangers can lurk in the form of wildlife, trail hazards, and unfortunately other people. Melissa, what was the name of the app that you told me about recently when we were taking a walk and it tracks where you go and you can have other people following along so that if anything were to go wrong, immediately somebody is notified?
Would you believe that I was literally typing it in to see if I could remember what it was? Because I use it. It's a Road ID. And I think I've mentioned it before, but it really, it's great. You can, when you go on a walk, walking in my neighborhood, I do this. It sends an alert to whoever you have as like a guardian. I think that's what they call them. And it alerts them when you leave and when you get back. And they have like a, they can see where you're at the whole time. So even on like little outdoor walks, Mandy, I'm already pushing for you to do this. It's just another way to be safe or, you know, for people to know where you are. I think that's so, so important. And obviously it's not important until you need it. You know, like it's not something you think about until you need it.
Yes.
So big fan of Road ID. I made my sister get it. I make everyone get it.
Yes, I am definitely going to download that for sure.
But stay on her, everyone. Stay on her that she does it.
So when I think of Arizona, I mostly picture a sandbox and then, of course, the Grand Canyon. I've never actually been to Arizona, so I don't really have any context for the landscape other than what I see in here on TV. And for some reason, I never really connected hiking with Arizona, just because, as I said, I really just picture a desert. But there's actually some pretty diverse hiking and a lot of opportunities to be found there. It's not all just high desert, as I ignorantly thought, but there's also mountain ranges and expansive forests where you can hike leisurely along creek beds or make a more challenging climb up to a peak. Some of the most popular trails are nestled within the Prescott National Forest, including the renowned Prescott Circle Trail, which is a 54-mile loop with incredible views and a variety of terrain. Another popular trail that you can hike there is the Thumb Butte Trail. It's a relatively short 2.2-mile loop trail that takes about an hour to complete, which makes it a popular spot for hikers and runners just like the woman in today's story, Kathy Sposito. In 1987, 23-year-old Kathy was just learning about herself and what she wanted to do in her life. She had moved from Brooklyn, New York to Prescott, Arizona 2 years earlier and was studying outdoor recreation and environmental studies at Prescott College. She waited tables at a local restaurant called Manuel's to support herself, but her true passion was the outdoors. A friend described Kathy as being one of a kind and said that she was a very generous and giving person with a great personality. She loved spending time in nature and primarily got around on her bike. On the morning of June 13, 1987, Kathy decided to wake up and take a hike at the Thumb Butte Trail early in the morning. She headed to the trailhead on her bike at about 7 a.m., and when she arrived, she chained her bike to a signpost before starting the 2.2-mile journey. Less than an hour later, a trail of blood more than 125 feet long led a group of fellow hikers to the grim discovery that Kathy had been brutally attacked just 300 yards from where she had chained her bike.
When authorities arrived at the scene, they immediately saw evidence of a horrific and violent attack. Two rocks in the immediate area had traces of blood and hair on them, and injuries to Kathy's head indicated that she had been hit several times with these rocks. Kathy had also been struck with a ratchet wrench, which was left at the scene, shot in the eye with a .22-caliber weapon, and then stabbed in the side of the head. Sheriff Rhodes of the YSCO later said that the level of brutality was an aggressive overkill. Kathy was transported to the Yavapai Regional Medical Center, where she was officially pronounced dead on arrival. Her cause of death was reported as trauma to the brain and loss of blood. While reports from 1987 said there were no signs of sexual assault, more recent reports do list sexual trauma among her injuries. Word of Kathy's murder spread throughout Prescott and Yavapai County and set the local residents on edge. The community had always been perceived as being safe, and Thumb Butte was a popular spot for hikers, bikers, and campers. Kathy was just a 23-year-old college student enjoying a hike like so many other residents did each morning. In fact, multiple people were in the area or on the trail the same morning Kathy was attacked. Three different people reported hearing Kathy's screams, but wrote it off as being kids playing, so they didn't go help her. Another witness heard her screams, but he didn't think he would be able to get to her due to the terrain. He explained that in some cases, someone could be in trouble and not very far away from other people, but yet they wouldn't be able to see them. And you've gone on trails like that where there's so much brush and everything right there. Like the idea of walking through that is impossible.
Yeah, I've definitely been on trails where you can see that there's other people on the trail, but it's not just as easy as, oh, I can just walk right over to them.
Right. Investigators warned visitors to avoid areas with heavy brush, thinking that maybe an attacker was easily concealing themselves in it. After scouring the scene for clues, investigators announced on June 16th that they didn't have any suspects and that there was no evidence of sexual assault. On June 20th, detectives told the Arizona Republic that they were searching for two men and a woman that they hoped would be able to give them more information about the case. And they went on to say that these people weren't suspected of any wrongdoing, but that they may have been in the area at the same time that Kathy was killed and may have actually seen her killer. Composite sketches of the three individuals were created and distributed around the area. The two men and the woman were thought to be in their late 30s or 40s, and one of them may have been wearing an Air Force uniform. Unfortunately, though, this ended up leading nowhere, and there was no further reporting on it. Another setback in the case came when a critical mistake was made in the handling of Kathy's DNA sample. So the medical examiner accidentally contaminated the sample with his own DNA, which actually led to him briefly being considered a suspect. So imagine that. When things go wrong, they really go wrong in that. So he was eventually cleared and the DNA testing was deemed unusable. And with no other suspects and no further leads, Kathy's case went cold, but it remained an open and active case.
Over the next 37 years, many different investigators with the YCSO worked on the case as they climbed the ranks within the agency. One of the investigators that worked on this case was the current Yavapai County Sheriff named David Rhodes. But back when he was a young deputy in the late 1990s and early 2000s, he did some work on Kathy's case. Despite his best efforts, though, he and his colleagues had to prioritize their other active cases, and so they weren't able to spend as much time working on cold cases, and progress was really slow. Years turned into decades, and after 30 years, they were still no closer to having any answers in Kathy's case. In 2016, Kathy's brother Sal went back to the crime scene with investigators and asked the public to come forward with any information, big or small. One of Kathy's old high school classmates wrote an email to the former fellow students of the high school letting them know that the police were still searching for Kathy's killer all these years later. This email read, quote, "I hope you'll forgive the grim posting, but I'm sharing it here in the interest of generating prayers and hope for closure for one of our lost friends, Kathy Sposito. You may recall from past discussions here that Kathy was brutally murdered in 1987 and the case was never solved. I happened to be in Prescott, Arizona this past weekend with my husband, and of course, she was on my mind. While strolling out of one of the downtown shops, I was stopped in my tracks by a large poster in the window with Kathy's photo. Apparently, the police there continue all these years later to search for her killer, and from what I've read and the discussion I had with the very kind shopkeeper, some new leads have recently emerged that have revived hope of solving the case. We saw the same poster in a number of local windows throughout the town, and I was glad, if that is the right word, to see that her memory and the quest for justice remain alive. I thought that you would want to know about it and to keep Kathy's soul and this case in your prayers." Something about that is just so touching to me, that her high school classmate, you know, wrote that update to everyone else. And of course, 30 years has passed. This has been a really, really long time, but I would appreciate getting an update like that if I had a classmate that something like this happened to and all these those years had gone by and I didn't have any information. I just thought it was really sweet that somebody was thoughtful enough to kind of, you know, inform everybody what was going on.
And that the people in Prescott are still, you know, sharing the information and still looking for being able to find her. It has to be comforting in a weird way to know that, like, she's not been forgotten.
It's so hard sometimes to find, like, the right word that you're thinking to describe a way that you're feeling about something, especially in cases like this that are so horrific. But I think comforting is a good – that was a good one to describe kind of how I feel like they must feel, you know, just to have that kind of an update. And we have so much more to get into with this story after a quick break to hear a word from this week's sponsors.
Just because the calendar says March doesn't mean the heat hasn't started up. But thanks to Lumi Whole Body Deodorant, you can feel and smell your freshest from top to bottom, literally. Lumi was designed by an OBGYN with only one thing in mind, to control odor everywhere on your body, including your pits, privates, and beyond. On top of that, it works for a whopping 72 hours.
Lumi is aluminum-free, baking soda-free, and paraben-free. Plus, it's pH balanced, so it's safe to use below the belt. But one of my favorite things about Lumi is that it's not trying to mask odors, but is formulated to stop odor before it starts, making it more like a pre-odorant.
If you haven't tried Lumi before, a great way to start is with their starter pack. It comes with really everything you need, and one of my favorite parts of the starter pack are the deodorant wipes. They're perfect for a day on the go or just to have on hand when you need them. Lumi offers all different application options, including solid stick deodorant, cream tube deodorant, and the deodorant wipes. I'm a big fan of the deodorant wipes, and you'll be sure to find one that works great for you too.
Lumi's starter pack is perfect for new customers. It comes with a solid stick deodorant, cream tube deodorant, two free products of your choice like mini body wash or deodorant wipes, and free shipping. As a special offer for our listeners, new customers get $5 off a Lumi starter pack with code MOMS at LumiDeodorant.com. That equates to over 40% off your starter pack when you visit LumiDeodorant.com and use code MOMS.
It's sunny and beautiful outside, which means I want to be out there. And while I can't just leave the house to vacay at a moment's notice, I sure can pretend. Welcome to the fabulous universe of June Parker's escapades in June's Journey. Forget about packing your bags. We're taking you on a roller coaster without a passport. Say goodbye to the mundane and get ready to dive into a whirlwind of drama and elegance with our leading lady, June Parker.
Whether you're itching for a juicy mystery or just desperate for a break from the daily grind, June's Journey is your ticket to excitement. Follow June as she unravels family secrets and tiptoes through the tangled mess of her sister's demise. It's like crashing a fancy party, minus the small talk about the weather. Although, we secretly love that too.
So dust off your virtual flapper dress and buckle up for a wild ride where every corner holds a clue and every twist keeps you on the edge of your seat. But hold on to your pearls. June's Journey isn't your average mobile game. I'm knee-deep in the fifth chapter, and trust me, it's more fun than a barrel of monkeys. With stunning scenery and catchy tunes, this game oozes sophistication and class. Don't waste another second. Jump into June's world and let the adventure begin.
Discover your inner detective when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
Are you ready to revolutionize the way you enjoy food and essentials at home? Introducing Dash Pass from DoorDash, your ultimate ticket to convenience and savings. With Dash Pass, you gain exclusive access to unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders, along with members-only deals and discounts that will leave your wallet smiling. Whether you're craving the flavors of your favorite restaurants, need groceries from across town, or anything in between, Dash Pass ensures that everything you need is just a few clicks away, delivered right to your door. With Dash Pass, not only do you enjoy $0 delivery fees, but you'll also benefit from lower service fees on eligible orders, making it the most affordable way to satisfy your cravings and stock up on essentials from your local favorites. What I really love is how quickly Dash Pass pays for itself. On average, it takes just two orders, which makes it a no-brainer investment for your budget. And as if that weren't enough, Dash Pass grants you special access to exclusive promotions and menu items, adding an extra layer of excitement to your DoorDash experience. You get all this for only $9.99 a month, which is a small price to pay for unlimited convenience and savings. My family and I have had DoorDash for the past year or so, and while I make most meals at home, I don't know that I could mom without it. I used it twice just this past week while we were dealing with a stomach bug at home, and it was so nice to have and to be able to focus on getting better and not running all over town to pick everything up for everyone. Don't wait. Sign up for Dash Pass now and unlock a world of possibilities, all from the comfort of your home. Dash Pass from DoorDash, delivering joy, convenience, and savings straight to your doorstep.
Get more from delivery for less with Dash Pass. $0 delivery fees and reduced service fees on eligible DoorDash orders. Sign up for Dash Pass today and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change. Terms apply. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for Dash Pass today only on DoorDash and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change. Terms apply.
And now back to the episode. So before the break, we were talking about the murder of Kathy Sposito and the investigation that was going on into her murder, as well as the 30 plus years that have really gone on since then, looking for who had attacked her. And Mandy also read that letter from the classmate that was, you know, talking about her story still being alive in Prescott, Arizona. And so around this time or shortly after, the YCSO was able to recruit a team of volunteers who were generously offering to give their time in an effort to help solve cold cases. At the time, this team was made up of 6 volunteers that included some retired law enforcement officers and was overseen by a homicide detective. The time and attention these 6 individuals contributed to working on decades-old cases like Kathy's was really invaluable to the officers who had their hands full working on current active cases on a daily basis. I was thinking about that the other day, like with all these cold cases and stuff, these officers that are working on, you know, their case day after day after day, and there's always a new one coming right. in and always a new one coming in. And if you can't solve it, like, what happens to it?
Right.
It turns cold. We know that. But like, I love that there has been a new push towards cold cases and people working on them because it's so important.
It makes a lot of sense that, you know, the investigators have to pursue leads that are hot, you know, at the time.
Right.
And so those are the ones that take priority. And if they're having a lot of movement and making a lot of progress in one case and not in another, I mean, it's just a matter of resources and time. Yes. Mm-hmm. And manpower, you can see how that's the case. So yeah, I just love that we have people who are willing to volunteer, you know, their time to help solve cold cases because it really is so important to the families.
It's working.
Exactly. And it is working.
At a 2023 press conference, the county sheriff said that a full-time paid detective, as Mandy was saying, really could never dedicate the amount of time necessary to work these old cases. Resources just aren't there. And he said that the sheriff's office wouldn't be where it is without the work of volunteers like this one man named Rich Finston. So Rich was a military investigator with the Army during the Vietnam War, and he was also an engineer and scientist. So of course, this background makes him a very valuable member of this cold case team. And he was really the go-to guy for DNA evidence analysis on Kathy's case. He described his role as, quote, interestingly tedious, end quote, which is a great way to describe something like this, right? So Rich understood the challenges they faced with solving cold cases and, of course, the reasons why paid deputies wouldn't be able to make significant progress due to time and resource constraints. So he was happy to help them continue their work. And the first case he was assigned when he started volunteering was Kathy's. In 2017, the volunteers started looking into DNA evidence from an assault case that happened in 1990. And this case was actually very similar to Kathy's case. It was eerily similar. The victim, who chose to remain anonymous, was camping with her boyfriend when she decided to go on a morning hike. She was in almost the exact same location at nearly the exact same time of day that Kathy's murder occurred when she was struck with a rock and sexually assaulted. Her attacker ran into the woods after the assault, but the DNA evidence wasn't ever linked to anyone, and the case went cold, just like Kathy's. So after realizing these similarities, the volunteer team decided to have the DNA samples from the 1990 victim sent off to Parabon Nano Labs to have familial DNA analysis performed. Mandy, you and I mentioned that we were at Othram Labs a few weeks ago, and we learned a lot about the familial DNA that they're doing, and just it's wild
what all can be done. The process is incredible.
Yeah, it's incredible. So they were able to apply for a grant to cover the cost of this testing. And remember, we talked about this before, but the DNA sample from Kathy's case had been contaminated and it was unusable. So the hope is really that if this 1990 case is somehow connected to Kathy's case and this person is responsible, you know, they might still have potential DNA from this 1990 DNA sample. So even though Kathy's isn't there, there's enough similarities between the two. They feel like if they can figure out the 1991, they'll also be able to figure out Kathy's.
Yeah. So familial DNA is used to help authorities identify suspects that have committed crimes and also to identify missing persons and unidentified remains. But for some time, the only database that law enforcement had was the FBI CODIS system. Probably most people listening have at least heard of the CODIS system.
Right.
The downfall with the CODIS system is that the only DNA profiles in the CODIS database are from people who have been convicted of a crime, and they were required by law to provide a sample of their DNA. So basically, like, that's not very many of us, you know, statistically speaking.
Right.
So the database also houses DNA samples that were collected from crime scenes, from missing persons cases, from biological relatives of missing persons, and from the remains of unidentified people. So as I said, the vast majority of the population is not in this database, or at least that was the case before several private and public companies started offering, you know, the general public the opportunity to submit their own DNA to a database in order to learn more about their ancestry and biological relatives. Everyone's heard of this. This has been a huge thing now for like the past decade, you know, at least, if not longer. 23andMe, things like that. Exactly, where, you know, I don't know how it's done. I guess you swab your cheek.
I think it's a swab.
Yeah, and you send it in. And then a few weeks later, you get a lot of information back about yourself and your relatives. And your DNA is now a matter of public record for the most part. So,
yeah.
But this is actually how they are building these databases, to be able to find unidentified people, or to find potential suspects, or to find a family member of a potential suspect that, you know, could, you know, lead them back to the person that they're looking for. So no surprise, law enforcement saw these databases as an opportunity to greatly increase their chance of finding familial DNA that matches the profiles of unknown offenders in cold cases. One of the more highly publicized cases of this happening was one that a lot of you have probably heard of and remember very well, was when the Golden State Killer was finally identified in 2018. His name was Joseph James D'Angelo Jr. And, you know, he had been a very well-known serial killer, rapist, you know, peeping Tom. And as it turned out, he was a former police officer who had been terrorizing communities in California for over 30 years by the time that he was caught using familial DNA that was collected by Family Tree DNA and was traced with GED Match and MyHeritage. So those are all, you know, different companies who provide this service. So Parabon Nanolabs is one organization that works with law enforcement to solve cold cases using this type of DNA. And they are very successful at it, like we said before. In May of 2019, they actually said they were solving cold cases at a rate of about one per week, which is very impressive, honestly. So the YCSO hired Parabon to compare the DNA collected from the 1990 assault with samples collected from the ratchet wrench that they found at the scene of Kathy's murder. Because, of course, you're going to find out right away if it's the same DNA. You're going to know right away if it's the same DNA from the 1990 attack. In total, there were 46 pieces of physical evidence submitted to multiple labs over the years, but it was the ratchet used by Kathy's killer that would eventually lead them to the person they were looking for. Unfortunately, though, the ratchet had been handled by multiple people at the crime scene back in 1987, including a hiker that carried it from its original location and handed it directly to a police officer that was on the scene. Again, multiple DNA profiles were found on this ratchet as a result of that. And while this was really frustrating to the investigators looking into the case decades later, they did, of course, recognize and, you know, respect the fact that things were just much different in 1987 when it came to gathering and preserving forensic evidence. We've talked about this before. How did they know, you know, to save all these things? And how did they know how to preserve these things for so many years? And back then, they were still figuring it out. They were still learning. Sheriff Rhodes said, you don't know what you don't know. So when they're handling the evidence all these years ago, they don't know that somebody's going to care about it years later, which we always are saying.
But it still gives me the chills because, like, they did at least know enough to hold on to it in hopes something would happen, right. But they had no idea what it would be. So I'm just fascinated by it. So even though this important piece of evidence was contaminated, they were still able to identify a profile that Rich Finston believed was that of the suspect. So he created a chart of the individual DNA profiles and organized the chart to give himself a visual of the amount of DNA each person contributed to the ratchet. So the two individuals that contributed the most DNA were obviously the victim and the perpetrator. In 2020, Parabon Nanolabs discovered a female relative of the suspect, which narrowed down the list of possible killers to just two people, Brian Scott Bennett or his brother. So both brothers lived in the county at that time, and Brian moved quickly to the top of the suspect list the more investigators discovered about his history, which involved violence and sexual assault. Brian, who actually went by Scott, was born on July 30th, 1970. Which meant, and we were both shocked by this, that at the time of Kathy's murder, he was just 16 years old. I mean,
wow.
Still a kid.
Just even hearing or making that realization, like seeing mm-hmm. the name and putting together that, like, even as an investigator, that would almost put me off of thinking that this was the right person. I would be like, there's no way.
Right.
Like, there's just no way that a 16-year-old kid could have been responsible for this brutal of an attack on a woman at a trail. You know, that just, it's shocking, truly.
And then at 19 to do it again,
right.
Like, you know, that's what they're thinking, but 16 is just so young. So Scott was a high school dropout from Kentucky who spent time in Prescott from 1985 to 1988 before he joined the Army in 1989. He went AWOL from the Army in 1990 and he returned to Prescott, but over the years he lived in California, Kansas, and North Carolina. Investigators said that Scott had a troubled youth and a troubled past. Not much in the way of legal trouble, but he loved a party is how they basically explained it. But as they further researched, they found out that Scott did have a bit of legal trouble in his background. In fact, he served time in prison in Arizona for forgery and became a fugitive in 1993. Nothing in the investigation, though, led authorities to believe that Scott knew Kathy at the time of her murder. And while it still seems hard to believe and accept that a 16-year-old could be capable of such a vicious murder, there was evidence that Scott had been involved in four other assaults between 1987 and 1993. He was actually charged and even brought to trial, but he was never convicted and never faced any consequences for the attacks. His second known victim, and that's important because who knows how many there actually were, was this anonymous woman that we mentioned earlier that had been attacked and sexually assaulted on Thumb Butte Trail while she was camping with her boyfriend in 1990. Just 2 months later, he assaulted another woman at a house party in Chino Valley, Arizona, after she goes to lie down in a bedroom after she had been drinking. So Scott follows her, tries to rape her, but luckily the other partygoers break down the door and he runs away, which picturing that whole scene, goodness. And just like how he just didn't care. Like, I mean, the trails are public.
Right.
He's in this house with other people. I don't know. It's just very brazen.
Disturbing. Yeah.
Yeah. So the victim in this case told authorities that she believed that Scott was going to kill her. He was actually arrested and brought to trial in this case as well, but he was ultimately acquitted on account of, quote, conflicting eyewitness testimonies,
Gosh, that's just so hard to hear. We've talked about that before, too, about how different sexual assault cases were handled back in the 1980s as well.
Right?
And so just hearing that they basically dismissed this case mm-hmm. because of something like that, it's just like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Just absolutely tragic. So 3 years later, in the summer of 1993, Scott struck again. He kidnapped a woman named Renee at knife point from a post office in Prescott and sexually assaulted her in her own vehicle. In an incredible twist of fate, the police actually pulled the car over for failure to dim the headlights, and Renee was actually rescued. Scott was arrested, but he was never charged with anything due to lack of evidence, which is literally the craziest thing I've ever heard, because they actually pulled him over driving this woman's car, I assume.
Right.
And mm-hmm. she's like, this guy is like attacking me and has, you know, kidnapped me. And they said, right. We don't have any evidence that anything happened. So he was not charged with anything in this case.
My gosh.
He was literally caught in the act of holding a woman hostage. And like, I just, that does not make any sense to me.
No, it doesn't. It will never make sense to us. And that's a good thing.
Yeah. So as tragic as it is that they didn't apprehend Scott at that time, the evidence from Renee's case would end up being another critical piece of the puzzle for the cold case volunteers that were working on Kathy's case 36 years later. Renee told Fox 15 Arizona that she was absolutely horrified by all of this, you know, coming to light, and she believed that there were more victims out there. Considering the DNA evidence and Scott's history of sexual assault and violence, he became the obvious suspect. The two other sexual assaults that happened in 1990 and 1993 were just more evidence that he was the guy they were looking for. In both of those cases, the women identified Scott as their attacker and reported that he threatened to kill them. The majority of the DNA on the wrench belonged to Scott, and the MO was also the same in multiple assaults. So because of all of that, he was determined to be the culprit in Kathy's murder. All that was really left to do was to get a sample of his DNA so that he could be conclusively linked to the murder and the case could be closed and solved. But unfortunately, it wasn't going to be that easy. As it turned out, Brian Scott Bennett had returned to his home state of Kentucky on January 7th, 1994, and completed suicide. He was 25 years old at the time of his death, which was about 6 months after he attacked Renee in June of 1993. He died as a result of a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head with a .22 caliber gun. He did not leave a note, and by the time he was finally linked to Kathy's murder in 2017, he had already been dead for 23 years.
Wow.
Yes, and we have more to get into after one last break to hear a word from this week's sponsors. Let's face it, squeezing in a workout amidst the chaos of kids, chores, and the daily grind feels like trying to solve a Rubik's Cube blindfolded. It's a challenge, to say the least. But hey, the perks of breaking a sweat are worth their weight in gold. I mean, who knew that regular exercise could unlock the secret to a good night's sleep or help summon energy levels rivaling a toddler on a sugar high? Personally, my fitness routine is like the duct tape holding my life together. Strong, reliable, and occasionally sticky. But fear not, fellow warriors of parenthood, for Total Gym is here to rescue our sanity from the brink of oblivion. With Total Gym Fit, the latest model from Total Gym, I've discovered a universe of over 85 exercises, all conveniently packed into one sleek machine. Frankly, before Total Gym, I didn't even know there were that many ways to contort my body without accidentally pulling a muscle. And get this, even my little munchkins have hopped on the bandwagon. It's like a family-friendly circus act right in our living room. Total Gym is designed for anyone ages 8 to 80 and any fitness level. And let's talk about the convenience. You can sculpt your entire bod in just 10 to 20 minutes, which is about the same amount of time it takes me to debate whether to post a selfie or a cat meme on Instagram. So really, there's no excuse. I mean, I managed to sneak in an arm workout this morning before my coffee had even finished brewing. Now that's what I call multitasking.
Total Gym could be found in over 4 million households, so you know this is a brand that you can really trust. But to make things even sweeter, Total Gym will let you try it for just $1 plus free shipping. Seriously, you can actually try the Total Gym for 30 days for $1 plus free shipping. Remember, it only takes 10 to 20 minutes a day to reshape your body. Head to totalgymdirect.com/moms for an additional 20% off your order. Plus, that includes a free ab crunch attachment and free shipping. This special offer won't be available for much longer. That's totalgymdirect.com/moms for an additional 20% off. And make sure you go to our URL, totalgymdirect.com/moms, so they know we sent you. People like to talk about the word legacy a lot, and when I think of my legacy, I hope a few things are remembered. Among the most important things to me are my love for my family, love of Diet Coke, and of course, my undying love of reality TV. One thing I have never been known for, though, is my memory skills, and that's where Rocket Money has really saved the day for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. If you're someone who's a sucker for a 7-day free trial like I am, Rocket Money has your back. A lot of my 7-day trials turn into months of subscriptions because I simply forget about it. But with Rocket Money, I can see exactly how I'm spending my money. And let me tell you, it can be a real eye-opener. When an app tells you exactly how much you've been spending the last month on Amazon purchases, well, it really makes you think twice before hitting buy it now.
Speaking of subscriptions, Rocket Money lets you know how many of those you even have and how much you're paying for them. And if you decide, hey, I only use that the first day, Rocket Money can actually cancel the subscription for you, making it easy and painless. And it's not just Melissa and I that are saving money. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features.
Rocket Money also alerted me to a few of my necessary subscriptions, like the streaming service that plays Love is Blind, and they let me know that the prices have increased. And I appreciate that kind of alert because it really makes you analyze what you're actually paying for, especially now that the season of Love is Blind is over. Why should I pay for something I'm not even using?
Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/moms. That's rocketmoney.com/moms. rocketmoney.com/moms.
And now back to the episode. So before the break, we were discussing that the police have now found the suspect, Scott Bennett, and they also found through this familial DNA, they were able to link him to possibly these other crimes, but they find his name, they go to seek him out and learn that he has died by suicide. And by the time they find this out, he's actually been dead for 23 years. But this roadblock wasn't going to stop investigators from confirming once and for all that Scott was responsible for Kathy's murder. They were determined to fully close the case with no shadow of a doubt. So they actually got a warrant to exhume Scott's remains from a cemetery in Kentucky. Detectives traveled to Kentucky to be there for the exhumation. The main goal there was to obtain a solid DNA profile from the remains and to definitively rule out Scott's brother as a suspect. That was a big thing we kind of learned where they talked about it, Othram. You know, you may have their family DNA and know that it's probably somebody, but until you actually have that person's DNA specifically, you can't say conclusively that that's who it is.
Right.
So doing this also helps his brother out, where like his brother's alive
for sure.
You don't want any suspicion on him since the other one is dead.
And they talked about a lot whenever we were taking the tour at Othram, just how complicated and difficult it actually can be to sometimes obtain a good enough DNA profile. Like they were talking a lot about how many markers it has and
right.
How good of a sample it is, you know, what they can get, and a lot of factors go into that, including like the age of the remains and the condition mm-hmm. that they're in and all those kinds of things. And it just really is complicated work. So just to think about them exhuming someone's body that's been buried for right. 23 years and the determination, you know, that it takes to do that to so that they can prove, you know, that this is the person who was responsible for these crimes.
Right. And while they were there, they were able to actually connect with Scott's brother. And in the end, they were confident that he wasn't involved in any of Scott's crimes. But they still got a warrant to collect a DNA sample from him as well. Unfortunately, they hit some undisclosed roadblocks with the exhumation, and they weren't actually able to have Scott's remains exhumed until 2022. So once they obtained the DNA profile, they were finally able to link him to the 1990 attack and to Kathy's murder. The YCSO held a press conference in August of 2023 where they announced that they had identified Kathy's likely killer. And by likely, they clarified that that meant Scott was identified as the killer with the, quote, highest degree of likelihood, end quote, in Kathy's brutal 1987 murder. Because of the fact that the ratchet wrench was accidentally contaminated by authorities, they weren't able to claim Scott was the killer with 100% certainty. But obviously, they're 100% sure he was the killer. But understandably, you just can't say 100% when you already have this contamination and everything there. So the vastly different practices around DNA collection, the handling and the storage at the time of Kathy's murder made getting a perfect DNA match a lot more unlikely.
The fact that they could even get this close is amazing.
Absolutely. I mean, to be between like two different people, like to know enough to be able to do that is absolutely amazing. So Sheriff Rhodes, though, gave credit where credit was due to the team of volunteers who had worked tirelessly on cold cases. Rich Finston spoke at the conference and talked about how he was assigned to Kathy's case 12 years earlier and had become personally attached to the case after working on it for so long. He was really emotional as he talked about the impact of solving these cold cases. The mayor, Phil Good, talked about how the chance for justice is much higher now with advancements in familial and direct DNA and how it allows for closure for families like Kathy's. Renee, the woman that Scott attacked in 1993, was overcome with emotion when she learned that he was finally identified after all this time. She also spoke at the conference and said, quote, "And today she's free. Kathy, you're free. We're always going to be tied together. We're always going to have a connection. She will be with me until the day I die. There's so many emotions. I can't tell you. I can't explain it. I haven't had a voice about this in 30-something years. It's time," end quote. Renee talked about her attack and reminded the public to always be vigilant of their surroundings. Whether you're young or old, everyone needs to be cautious. Renee hopes that sharing her story will encourage more survivors to come forward to share their own stories and to seek the help they need to heal. Sadly, Kathy's parents passed away before her killer was identified, but her brother had been heavily involved in her case over the years. He wasn't at the 2023 press conference, but a YCSO representative said he had expressed a lot of gratitude for all the hard work that had been done in Kathy's case.
Justice is often bittersweet, and there were some mixed emotions when it was discovered that Kathy's killer was no longer alive. Those who had spent years pouring their hearts into her case were both relieved and a little disappointed in the outcome. There would be no arrest, no trial, and no sentencing, but at least they could be sure that Scott would never victimize another woman again. Sheriff Rhodes said that the hope is always to find the suspect and to get a conviction to bring justice, but that didn't happen in this case. He said it was still worth all the effort, though, if for nothing other than to give a voice to the victims and to give answers to the survivors and the community. The sheriff further said that when Scott took his own life, he really spared them 3 more decades of victimizing people. Even though Scott would never face justice in court, the conclusion still brings peace to the survivors and to the Esposito family. Even though it's been decades since Kathy's murder, it's still on the minds of many. Scott's DNA was added to CODIS in an effort to help identify other potential victims of his. Officials believe there is a very good chance that there are more survivors out there, but they haven't been able to make any connections to other crimes just yet. Sheriff Rhodes thinks that when you consider the frequency that Scott was willing to act, that it's really not likely there's only 4 cases that exist, and YCSO said that they want to validate all the potential victims in this case, and they hope that more will come forward.
The team of volunteers that work to solve cold cases in Yavapai County have been instrumental in solving several cold cases in recent years. Another case they solved dated back 24 years to April 23rd, 1999. In that case, 65-year-old Crystal Forrest disappeared with her 2 dogs and all of her belongings while driving to her new home in Austin, Texas. One of the volunteers working on this case was retired LEO Paul Chastain, and he spent 2 years working to prove that a man named Robert Reed was behind Crystal's disappearance. He was the last person to see her alive and had befriended her and offered to help her move. After Crystal disappeared, Robert burned down his apartment and went on the run. So Detective Chastain chased Robert all over the country for years until one day Robert was arrested on unrelated charges and he was finally able to be questioned by Detective Chastain. Now, this is wild, one of the most wild things I've ever read, and I can't wait to tell you guys. He claims that he has amnesia and doesn't remember a thing. But of course, Detective Chastain isn't buying it. And he interviewed Robert 3 times and showed him pictures of things that would be easy for Robert to recognize. Things like his mom or a picture of a former girlfriend. So it wasn't until the 3rd round of questioning, though, that Robert broke this amnesia facade after he's shown a photo of his beloved cat. He asked the detective, "How's Mr. Butters doing?" And Robert immediately realized he just messed up and he knew it was all over. I love that Mr. Butters the cat was the downfall of this man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I totally get it. If you show me a picture, if I haven't like seen my animals and you show me a picture, I'm going to be like, "Oh, how's my little baby?" Like, you know, so.
But not your mother? I mean, that's where it's like Mr. Butters is the downfall. That's That's rough. So Robert confessed to the murder of Crystal Forrest and agreed to tell the police where her remains were located. Detective Chastain was happy to help get Robert behind bars, but his real motivation was, of course, helping Crystal's family find justice and closure.
In another instance, this volunteer team helped solve a 28-year-old rape case in 2023. A 35-year-old Prescott woman was raped in the early morning hours of October 18, 1995, by an unknown man in the parking lot at a bar in Prescott. The victim had left her car in the parking lot after having some drinks and had walked to a nearby hotel, but at around midnight, she took a taxi back to her car. Just as she opened her car door, she was attacked and forced to the ground and raped. She couldn't see her attacker well and couldn't give more than a vague description of him to investigators at the time. The sheriff's office did obtain DNA samples and fingerprints, but they were never able to identify a suspect until the volunteer team started working the case in November of 2022. They learned that although the DNA had been processed, it had never been entered into the CODIS database. So they, So they really put the pressure on the state to enter this DNA profile into the system. And when they finally did it, they immediately found a match. It was a 53-year-old at the time that they caught him. He was 53, named Gerald Todd Tubbs. So he was interviewed and then he was arrested. The work of the Sheriff's Office volunteer cold case team was responsible for capturing this predator and bringing a sense of peace and justice to his victim who had been waiting for 30 years. Gerald is currently incarcerated in the Yavapai County Jail. So as we said, these cases are technically solved, but investigators do believe that there could be more survivors or victims out there. So if anybody has any information that is related to the murder of Kathy Sposito or Crystal Forrest, or if you have any information about the offenders, Brian Scott Bennett or Gerald Todd Tubbs, please contact the Yavapai County Sheriff's Office at 928-771-3260. And if you're actually interested in becoming a cold case volunteer with Yavapai County, I'm not sure if you have to be local to them or not, but there is information about how you can do that on the website. You can find at ycsoaz.gov. Yeah, super awesome if you have skills that you feel like you can contribute and you want to volunteer your time to something like that. Definitely something to check out and look into. It sounds like they're doing really, really amazing work over there.
And I, like you were saying in the beginning, I'm super fascinated with stories like this where it has been 30 years, but technology has caught up and people who have committed these crimes have to be so scared. You have to live every day being terrified because they're going to find you.
And you should be.
But you know what? I was thinking about Renee when she was talking about Kathy being a part of her, and that just all gives me chills and how like she's so happy that they got justice. But I was thinking too how Renee over the last 30 years has to think, what if this person comes back? Like you just have to if they haven't had an arrest. So to have peace for her in that way that like they can't hurt you anymore. I don't know. That the cold case squads and stuff are doing amazing work, and I'm very appreciative we have them. I hate that it's a volunteer job, but I'm glad that volunteers are willing to do it.
Definitely. And I really just also just love so much that they're looking into cold case rapes. It's not just murders.
Right.
Because like you said, these victims, they live in fear after something like this happens to them.
Yeah.
And to just, there is something very unsettling about not knowing who your attacker was, where they came from, you know, where are they living and where are they now? Like you said, there's just, it's very unnerving. And to have to live your life not having those answers, it's just incredible that they're looking into those types of cases as well for survivors who are living and are still seeking answers so many years later.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so that was our story for this week. Melissa, let's turn the page and do last thing before we go. We are done with Love is Blind. I know some of the people who listen are probably very happy with that.
And we got a few new converts this year. Yeah. We had several people on Instagram writing or in emails saying, I've never watched it. This is great. And things like, one wrote today, I hate Shake. So I was like, oh, you're in season two.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm proud of us. Yes. We've only had to talk about it for six seasons before we got some people to start paying attention.
Hey, it happens.
Okay. So this week we're going back to just our silly regular last thing before we go thing. And but we're doing something different that we haven't done, an ad lib.
At least in a while.
Yeah.
So actually, this came from our friend Miranda B. She is listening to the episodes, I think, backwards. And so she's like, I just came across the one where you guys asked for Mad Libs, you know, games. So she came up with one and I really love it. And so I asked you earlier to come up with like nickname, plural noun, all these things. You don't know why. I do. And so I'm going to ask you to fill these in for me and I'll put them in and then I'll read what it is. So first one, nickname.
Sweetie.
Sweetie. Okay. And plural noun?
Bananas.
Okay. And a regular noun?
Tahiti.
Girl. The next one is a female name.
Luna.
Next one, a noun.
Book.
Book. Okay. And adjective.
Tiny.
Okay. A job or an occupation.
Snake milker.
I hate it. Next one, verb ending in ed.
Baked.
Okay. A noun.
Gym.
Of course. And an adjective.
Humongous.
Okay. And one more adjective.
Hysterical.
Okay. All right. I think you'll like this. Okay. Okay. So this is the Mad Libs for the Moms of Mysteries new spinoff podcast.
Oh, boy. Ready? Okay.
Hey, sweeties, and welcome to the Bananas and Mysteries podcast, a true Tahiti podcast featuring myself, Luna, and my dear book, Melissa. Today's episode features a tiny story about a snake milker who baked their gym. Stick around until the end for our humongous segment, Hysterical Thing Before We Go. I thought it was so cute.
I love that. Also, should she make that for us?
Yes, it was very sweet. I was like, oh my gosh. Well, I forget everything. And I was like, tag the email to come back to it because I was like, this is so sweet.
I know.
So if you have ideas, feel free to email at momsandmysteries@gmail.com. Or not at moms. Yeah, to momsandmysteries@gmail.com. And yeah, we love little games, silly things, anything like that. Making it work for us, I had to put in no work. I just said, Mandy, answer these questions.
Perfect.
It was wonderful, and I loved it.
Awesome. All right, guys, that was the episode for this week. We will be back next week, same time, same place, new story.
Have a great week.
Bye.